So what I'd like to do is turn the meeting over to my son, Bill Heck. And Bill is the security expert. He has been giving talks to this group every January for the last, how many years? 10, 15?
10, 12, somewhere between 10 and 15.
Somewhere between 10 and 15 years. So it's been a while. So he's got a lot of good things to tell you. Then after he finishes,
right.
We'll take a brief break, no more than 10 minutes. And then Sam Colon's going to come in. He's going to talk all about Windows 10 and what you need to do or not need to do. So a lot of people have contacted me and they panicked and they said, am I going to lose my computer? Am I going to lose access? Do I have to go out and buy a new computer with Windows 11? So these are the questions that Sam's going to answer. Okay, let's get started.
All right, can everybody hear me okay? All right. Good, because I'm fighting a cold, and I don't get much louder than this, so you'll just have to sit closer if you can't hear me, but thanks for having me again. As my dad said, it's probably 12, 13, 14, 15 times that I've done this, and this crowd looks like about twice as many as last year, so it's good. I was just afraid that, because it kept getting smaller and smaller, that I was scaring away people every year, so... So for those that don't know me, just a little bit about me. I work for a company called Optiv. Ironically, I'm wearing the shirt, but that actually wasn't on purpose. It's just a warm shirt and today's cold. So I work for a company called Optiv, which is based out of Denver, but I work remotely from West Bend. I've been doing IT and security for like 33 years now. It's been a long time. My hope is by next year that I'm going to be retired, so we'll see what happens there, but that is the plan. And I'm also a part-time musician, and that's something that I do try to balance with my actual job, but actually do tour the country and play places. In fact, I'll be up in Minneapolis coming up in a couple weeks, so we'll see if that actually happens or not. We'll keep the politics out of it, but all right. So general, the agenda, this is pretty similar to what I did last year. It's a little bit more fine-tuned into what's going on now, but I'm going to talk quite a bit about scams and just the various scams between web, phone, text, various places that they're coming from. I'll talk a bit about passwords because those are always a hot point for hackers to get in on. And a bit about password databases, basically like password management applications. Multi-factor authentication. I have to talk about AI because who's not talking about AI, you know? So got to do a little bit of that. And quick question, who was not here last year for my talk? Okay, so a few people, so that's good. So like I said, I'm repeating quite a bit of this, but it'll be new to quite a few of you, so that's good. Delivery scams is something that we're seeing a lot of in our line of work. New Year's resolutions, we're still close enough to the end of the year. We can talk a little bit about New Year's resolutions. We haven't given up on them completely yet, so hopefully. And then if there's time, we're going to go through some trivia questions. Yes, there will be a test. Okay, scams. So I always, what's unfortunate is these are becoming more and more prominent every single year. I'd love to say that scammers are getting less aggressive, but they're not. And this is the group they're going after. I mean, not you specifically, but they're definitely going after retirees. As I said, I hope to be one soon myself. But they are going after what I always kind of call the trusting generation, the people like, why wouldn't I trust a person? I'm going to give you reasons why you shouldn't trust them. First of all, however you get contacted with a scam, whether it be phone, email, they're going to pretend to come from an organization that you're aware of. This might be your bank. It's a pretty good guess. You know, I mean, if you're somebody from the Midwest, it's like, maybe BMO, maybe Chase. You know, that's probably going to cover about half the people. And then retail, like Amazon. I mean, who doesn't shop at Amazon? So a scam's going to come. Yeah. What was that? Okay. Well, you might be safe then.
For the time being.
So, you know, there a scam, for it to work, it's going to have to come from someplace that you're aware of. If you get, you know, most people, if they get something, you know, whether it be a text, let's just say an email, and it's from a company you've never heard of, that increases, you know, that obviously makes it way more likely that that it is a scam. But if it's coming from someplace like Amazon or someplace like BMO Harris or Chase Bank or whatever, it doesn't automatically make it safe. If a scammer is really gonna focus on a particular group, like spear phishing, they're gonna learn a little bit about you before they just jump in and just start throwing random stuff at you. Okay, scammers that always address their scam as either a problem or a prize. You know, you're never going to get a scammer call you or email you saying, "Hey, I just wanted to contact you to just make sure you're okay with, you know, good with our customer service." Like, no, they're going to be, there's a problem. You're overdrawn in your bank account. Your check bounced. Maybe it came from the, theoretically from the IRS saying that you're late on tax payments. Something to make you panic. And I always, in fact, I'm going to jump to this one. They pressure you to act immediately. This is kind of like what I would compare to the door-to-door salesperson. You know, the reason why those work is because people are sometimes uncomfortable with making people just go away or slamming the door on people. If you say to, let's say, somebody that comes to your door trying to sell you something, if you say, "Oh, let me check with, check with my wife or check with my husband and get back to you," they don't want to hear that. They want you to answer now. They want you, they're hoping to, you know, kind of ride on your emotions, you know, your instincts right at the moment. I've had a guy in my neighborhood come by and sell, I think it was like pest control. And what he'll do, I live kind of on the far, far west edge of West Bend, so on a horseshoe street that's not really attached, we're not really in a subdivision. And what he'll do is say, "Oh, I already got Dustin and John and Dale to sign, you know, who are my neighbors. The last time that happened, I pulled out my phone. Well, let me call Dustin and see if that's true." He's like, "Oh, no, you don't want to do that." I'm not saying this guy was trying to scam me, but he'll throw names out there. And then this is what an attacker, somebody trying to scam you, this is what they're going to try to do, is make you act immediately. They don't want you to check, you know, and get back to them. So definitely watch out for that. This is a big one. In almost every case, they're going to ask you to pay using a gift card or using PayPal or using something other than a common way. You know, they might ask you for a bank account number. Most people are savvy enough to not give that out. But no legitimate business is ever going to make you pay for anything. First of all, they're not going to contact you, say, "Pay us now," unless you're overdrawn or something's late, but it's not going to be in the form of gift cards. So, has anybody ever gotten contact that asked to pay for anything in gift cards?
You know what,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
things that might think.
Right, and most of the time that doesn't, you know, it's not going to work if somebody asks for your bank account or your social security number. Don't ever give it out. I mean, that's just, you know, absolutely never, ever give that out. What you need to do if you ever, if there's ever something that's questionable is go to the source every single time. If it's from somebody that says, oh, I'm from your bank, you know, I'm assuming like in this case it's a phone call. Call your bank directly. But look up the number yourself. Don't ever use the number that they give you. Phone numbers are really, really easy to fake. Same with caller ID. Don't, you know, if somebody calls your phone and your caller ID says Chase Bank, maybe it is. It's probably pretty likely that it is, but it's not guaranteed that it is. In fact, one of my ex-coworkers, because we basically do what's called ethical hacking, where we go in and we try to like break applications, trick people into doing things like this. But you always have to get permission. You know, that's like the get out of jail free card. I had it's a former coworker that doesn't work there anymore because he decided to practice on people without permission, and he was really successful at it. And one of the things that he did allegedly was he set up a phone number bank where it looked like it was coming from all these legitimate businesses, but every time he'd send out mass like scam emails to people, they'd come from a different address, different phone number if he was doing it over the phone. He was pretty savvy. So you got to watch for that stuff. All right, text scams. I always tease my dad because he always turns his phone off, so I can never, ever get a hold of him. Who here keeps their phone on generally all the time? See?
Mom does.
I know, but she can't get a hold of you either, so. So, yeah, I mean, we use our phones for a ton of different, I mean, let's face it, we use it as a phone, probably the least, you know, we use it for everything else. Obviously, we receive texts from people. These are a few that I've received that I wanted to show you. From JP Morgan Chase, did you attempt a Zelle payment of the amount of $5,000? The answer was no. But I don't have a Chase account either. So I think what they were looking for is they were just looking for me to actually respond so they know they actually had a live person. This was ignored. The little no under there, that was actually just more humor on my part. But this one is probably a little hard for some of you in the back. Your Netflix membership has been ended, which is a little bit of a weird way to say it. Because we're having some trouble with your current account information. Well, first of all, most people know that if they're having any problem with your account information, the last thing Netflix wants to do is end your subscription to them. So that's kind of a red flag right there. Validate your account information by click link below, is what it says. So there's typos. There's some things in here that should be big red flags as to something you know you should not click. Notice the URL that was included in here. It's not netflix.com. They wouldn't send you anything like this anyway. But it ends in .co. Anybody know what that is? Yeah. It's the country of Colombia. So that's actually one that is very commonly used because people, you know, your brains play tricks on you. You look at that and think it might say .com. So that one's pretty commonly used. Let's see. This one my wife actually got. I thought it was sort of clever because answer and win, looks legit from Ace Hardware. Actually is a drill driver, like exact one that I've got at home that I really like. But it came from a no reply, blah, 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 a bunch of stuff. Let's see, YRESWA.ML. Anybody know what that one is? It's the African country of Mali. Now, what's interesting about that one is, well, first of all, if it came from Mali, they probably have no tie to Ace Hardware. But big red flag there. But what's interesting about Mali, I actually did a little research on this. Those .ml domains are becoming more and more common because in the U.S., if you want a website, if you want, you go to a internet service provider, you can pay for a domain. Like I've got one, I've got one that I keep up for my dad's genealogy newsletter that he sends out. But there's a fee for that, you know, every month or every year, however you pay for it. Mali is one of the first countries where they had free domains, completely open to anybody that wanted one. All they had to do was just grab it, and so they're all over the place. But people from the States can also use them. You're not limited to actually being there. So I was wondering why we've seen so many .mls. Regardless, don't click on stuff like that. Let's see, a couple more that I've received. Let's see, AT&T, we've accidentally overcharged your phone bill last month. Please your reimbursement here. So there's a missing word in there. This one was just a little bit, I mean, it wasn't that tricky. I know not to click on stuff, but .info can be, for a URL, can be tough because there are legitimate businesses that use .info. And I personally use AT&T, so it's like, okay. Didn't click on it, but that one is definitely a scam. This one should be super obvious that it's a scam. I don't know if anybody's ever received things like this on your phone. A few things that jump out at me. There's .sale. That's another one that can be used for legitimate businesses, but not too often. But .sale, the URL is just a bunch of garbage that makes no sense. There's no context to any of it. And the other big red flag, the reason I wanted to point this one out was right at the top of that. See how it says 20 recipients? Most of the time for things like this, if they're sending it out from their phone, like let's say, you know, from AT&T, you know, if they've got an Android, they're limited to 20. So these things usually come in blocks of 20, and what they'll do is they'll just blast it out to hundreds and hundreds of groups of 20. So anytime you see stuff like this, this should be really obvious that it's fake and something you should definitely avoid. And I didn't say it before, but I will make sure to get a copy of this whole presentation. I see some people taking frantic notes. Thank you. I'll make sure everybody's got a copy of this. We'll have it uploaded wherever, to your website or, you know, someplace that's accessible to you. All right. Passwords. So this list, this is from the Reader's Digest. I was just doing some general searches and looked at the list of the 50 most common passwords that are in use. This drives me crazy because have we really gotten that lazy where we use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for a password? Now, one of my jobs at Optiv is we focus on applications. We test web applications, mobile applications. And if an application allows you to use a password like that, that's a high finding. That's something we're going to write up. So they're getting better and better at not allowing things like that, but there still are apps out there that allow really weak passwords. You might want to question what app it is that you're using that's allowing it. And it might also be worth asking them, like, when are you going to strengthen your security? Because there are automated tools. I did a demo probably 10 years ago on a password cracking, and where I just went through a fake web application and seconds. I mean, it takes seconds to go through and grab passwords like this. Web applications are supposed to not allow weak passwords. They're also not supposed to allow brute forcing which is things like using tools. They're supposed to see, like, okay, there's three invalid attempts because a hacker's going to guess at a password, and it should lock them out at that point. At the very minimum, it should lock them out for a time frame, like 15 minutes. They'll get frustrated and hopefully go away. But if any of the passwords that you're using are on this list, your homework is to go home and change those passwords. This was just kind of an interesting table. This is a couple years old now, but it's basically a table that shows how quickly that hackers can attack or can actually crack passwords. There are a lot of variables on this. If I ran like a password crack from my laptop here versus if I did it from a bank of 25 desktops, it's not going to be as fast here. So, number of characters, 4, that's pretty much instantly. What's interesting about this is as the number of characters of your password go up, there's definitely a line where all of a sudden, like, I'm kind of looking at this one in here, if you're using just lowercase letters, it may take them 3 weeks with 9 characters, but 2 years at 10. So length of password makes a huge difference, which is why I'm going to talk a little bit about password managers, because it's hard to remember long passwords, and it's frustrating to have to remember them as well, but I'm going to get to that in a second. If you're going to use manual means and not use a like a password manager, some of the ways of actually remembering passwords are, don't use things like names of your pets or your kids, or those things are very easily guessable. You can do things like lyrics of a song or a poem, passage from a book. There are a lot of different ways, and most applications will allow longer passwords. I don't know how fast people are typing. Here, if you've got like a 30 character password, but you can, do it really quickly, maybe that'll work out fine. I'm kind of a medium typist where I'm not super fast, but I'm not super slow, but I use a password manager because I don't want to have to remember all these passwords. So let's talk just a little bit about this. Basically what a password manager is, it's just an application for storing your passwords. It can give you reminders as to when you should change your password. This is per application. In fact, what I'm going to do, here we go. Okay, so this is KeePass. This is one that I use. I'm going to unlock this section. It actually uses my fingerprint to unlock it. So I've got a ton and ton of stuff in here. What's nice about it is it gives me a really easy way to never use the same password on two different things. Because that's another thing, is if you use, a weak password or even a stronger password on you use the same one on every single app, if one of them gets cracked, then they're all going to get cracked. So password manager is a good way for to keep it unique per. So I told you I'm definitely I'm into music stuff, and this is one called Sweetwater, which is a music store in Indiana that I do a lot of shopping. Yeah, definitely. So the password manager, if I go into it, this is basically like what the entry looks like, and I'll show you the password because there's nothing like super confidential within here, but that's not a password you're going to remember. It's a big mess, and I change my passwords pretty often anyway. The way you would use it is, like in this case, I would double click on there. It would open up my URL. I'm going to go into login, email address, continue. Now it's saying, what's your password? So I'll go to my password manager. I just click the key, and then go back over to here, paste it, and done, I'm in. So most of the time, my passwords, I have no idea really what they are. Like, I don't really look at them. I definitely don't remember them. Most of my passwords are probably somewhere around 25, 30 characters long. Yeah. Question.
So, even though you're having those passwords in the time of the year,
yes.
You still go in and change them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just my kind of obsessive nature. She had asked, like, do I still go in and change my passwords even if they are long and complex? Yes, I do. Probably not every month, but I'd say probably 2-3 times a year I go through everything and change all my passwords. That's me being a security person. I'm a little obsessive about that stuff. But you saw it. Got me in. I never typed the password. I just copied it and pasted it, you know, right out of my password database. Now, here's a list. Now, KeePass is free. I like it a lot. The only drawback with it is the database. So there's a file basically that gets stored on your computer. There is a master password. You have to make sure that's strong, because if they get the password to get into your password database, keys to the kingdom. So that's got to be really strong, and you can't really use the password database or password manager to hold a password for your password manager. So that's one you just got to remember. But here's a list of some of them that are really common. If you have a Mac, the passwords that comes with the OS, KeePass is free. Keeper, Bitwarden, I believe there's a fee for those. But one kind of nice thing about those, same with NordPass, is they actually will store in the cloud. So if you have multiple devices, whether it be multiple computers, or you use your phone to access things, you can pull those up pretty easily. So this is just a list. It's not a all-inclusive list. There are probably hundreds of password managers out there. Bottom line is I would absolutely recommend them. There's no better way to strengthen the passwords that you're using. All right, and then the other part of it is multi-factor authentication. This has gotten better and better each year. I know when I first started talking to this group, multi-factor authentication, you almost didn't see it that often. AWS, like Amazon's AWS, was one of the first ones where you started seeing it. But now most banks use it, most legitimate businesses, including Amazon, use multi-factor authentication, which is, in addition to your password, it's providing something you know, something you have, or something you are. Some other thing. I don't have a screenshot of it, but Google Authenticator, I've got on my phone here, and I've got probably like 25 different websites where you basically go to it and say, like, okay, Amazon, where right now, if I logged into Amazon and say, okay, your password's good, enter your six-digit code, which is 339447. That only lasts about a minute, and then it refreshes, and then it refreshes again, and then it refreshes again. So if you're using, you know, online banking, which I absolutely recommend, or really anything where you're purchasing anything sensitive information, use multi-factor authentication. Most of the time it's offered, but a lot of times it's not mandatory. You know, they don't make you use it, but I would absolutely recommend it. There's nothing that frustrates hackers more than running into that. Then they're just going to turn around and go away. Okay, AI. Got to talk a little bit about AI. And my cutoff time is 7:25, 7:30? 35. Okay, we're good on time. Okay. So it's still kind of the big unknown. There's a lot going on with AI. There's a lot of good that's going on. I think you guys have done some talks on AI and how it can actually help with your family history and doing research. I use it at work. It's amazing some of the stuff that it's actually simplified, but hackers are using it too. And one of the big ones, and I did demo this last year, and that was voice cloning. And I'm going to show you a little bit of that too. But before I do that, I just want to play about 2 minutes of this video. This was a recent ABC News story. And hopefully...
We turn now to an inside look at the so-called grandparent scam. Family members targeted with phone calls from fraudsters posing as their loved ones, begging for money immediately to get out of supposed emergency. Here's ABC's chief investigative correspondent, Aaron Contursi.
I knew that was his voice. It just couldn't have been anybody else.
Shirley Morrow answered her phone and says she instantly recognized her grandson Joseph, a Marine who visited her often. But this panicked phone call alarmed her.
He says, I hit a lady in a car who was 8 months pregnant. And she is in the hospital. And I'm in jail.
Crying and in shock, Shirley says Joseph handed the phone to another man claiming to be an attorney.
The man said, well, if you can raise $9,000, the charge will be dropped and Joseph will be released.
The 91-year-old rushed to her bank, taking out the full amount in cash, not realizing she'd actually fallen victim to an all-too-common scam.
It's called the grandparent scam because the scammer will pretend to be a grandchild and call their older adult relative and pretend to be in distress.
Shirley's case is just one of tens of thousands reported nationwide. Tonight, a look inside the technology aggressive scammers are using to mimic voices and trick seniors, plus rare insight from the FBI as they crack down on this rampant problem.
A new report from the FBI detailing how much money Americans lost to scams last year. Those who lost more than $100,000 increased significantly.
More than a dozen people facing federal charges for an alleged scam targeting more than 400 seniors.
Rebecca Keithley, an assistant section chief with the FBI's financial crime section, says these grandparent scams are exploding in popularity because they're so lucrative.
Last year, for older adults alone, they lost $4.9 billion.
That's just what was reported.
We know that those numbers are on.
Okay. So, lost my microphone. So, the tooling for voice scamming is getting really slick. I mean, even more so than last year. What I did last year, and they said, several of you will probably remember this, but I took...
This video shows immigrants arriving at the port to get ready to depart for America.
So I took a recording of my dad. I just said, can you send me something, some audio of yourself? And I used this tool by this company called 11 Labs. I had to subscribe to it, but it was like $9 a month. And within probably 30 minutes...
This is Bob Peck. I'd like to personally thank every one of you for being a part of MPAFUG for all of these years. To show my appreciation, I am personally going to pay each one of you the sum of $10,000. I will be sending you an email, and all you need to do is click the link in that email to process the payment.
So, that was quick. Right. There goes the inheritance, right? And so one of the big differences that I've noticed from last year to this year, and I was actually going to try to set up a real-time demo, and it proved to be a little bit too complex and it was going to take a little too long, but I've been watching some presentations on using 11 Labs, using a new thing they've got called Agent. You've all probably heard of Alexa, So you can 11 Labs has got where you can build your own, basically your own Alexa. And what hackers are, what hackers are doing now, what we're starting to hear is instead of just having a recording of a voice like that, like I'm going to send you an email, click on this for payment, it's interactive. But it's in whatever cloned voice I want. So there was a story that I saw where a woman got called by her grandson, and they were having a conversation. It wasn't just, okay, it's a recording, and then it ended, and then didn't make a decision. It was a real-time conversation. So you can, as a hacker, I'd be able to script basically like a whole flow chart of if they say this, this is what I'll respond with. But real-time. And it's gotten, like I said, just in the last year, it's gotten really, really advanced. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like in a year or 2 years from now. But, yeah, just be really careful. Hopefully none of you will receive a call like that. But just like if you received an email or a text message, contact the source. If there's any question at all, and, you know, anything seems off, end that conversation, contact who you think it is directly, and just to verify. Let's see, delivery scams. These are becoming more and more popular, and they're definitely popular around the holidays. These are ones that I've gotten, FedEx ones. We'd like to inform you that your package cannot be delivered. Please use the button to update your personal personal address. Let's see, the UPS one. Our driver can't find your, this one I found kind of funny, because our driver can't find your address and your package is still pending, and our driver will re-deliver tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't know my address, how are you going to re-deliver? But yeah, these are big, and you'll hear people say, yeah, but those logos are real. That stuff yeah, exactly. So what? It's like, that stuff is so easy to fake. Even that FedEx logo isn't the right one. It looks like somebody just used a font and colored it the FedEx way, but that's not FedEx's logo. So what I'd say for delivery scams is, I mean, for me, you know, if I order things from Sweetwater, it's like Christmas. So I'm looking on there, I'm like, oh, is it there yet? Is it there yet? You know, is the guitar, you know, 6 blocks away? Oh, now it's 4 blocks away. Believe me, I know where it is. So you know, they check my phone, you know, 25 times a day to find out where my package is. So just be aware. If you get contacted, you know, if something like this comes through and says, oh, we, you know, having trouble delivering your package, there are other means. I mean, in most places like Amazon, they send you, you know, you can go on to Amazon.com and see where your package is. You know, UPS is the same way, FedEx is the same way. So, you know, take advantage of that. You know, do your own homework. Don't just assume if some random message comes up saying your package is late or can't be delivered, that's the case. This is pretty much all the stuff I just said. Yeah, keep track of your deliveries. No delivery company policies, because some of them, like UPS, I believe will, if they attempt delivery a couple times, I think they'll actually bring it back to their warehouse, whereas I think FedEx will keep trying, or I don't, maybe I'm mixing those up, but FedEx, you can pick it up at a FedEx, you know, FedEx mm-hmm. facility, so.
Sometimes
yeah, that too.
I got better ones. Two pieces coming into my house, and I didn't know they were there. I came out, coming out the front door, and the boxes are flipped over, and half the piece is gone.
Wow.
And it wasn't. So I took the boxes, put them in my vehicle, took them back to the pizza place, and laid them on the table. They had ants all over them, and I said, "How would you like me to sue you for falling? Because I don't use the front door to come in and out."
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what to say. And I said, don't you have a map of the city so you know where to deliver these things? And for a while, I was getting other people's packages, and I was stupid enough to go and deliver them and say, please, get your mailing straight. But I found out the delivery person didn't read the address, and the street stops,
mm-hmm.
doesn't come back till halfway in the city, so they just leave it at my house.
Lazy.
Yeah. Well, I got set up with that, too.
Yeah, I understand that. And then, of course, never give sensitive personal information to strangers. I won't read the entire paragraph. Let's talk about those New Year's resolutions. As I said, I'm not gonna read this for you. You'll have a copy of this, but be cautious with your email. It's still probably the number one way of getting people to fall for things. I wouldn't say it's the most successful. Phone calls are actually the most successful. Phishing, or vishing. has still like a 35% success rate. Let's see, I will never send money to strangers. If I could reward that, I will never send money to
crypto machines
or businesses that I'm not aware of or unsolicited emails. I will do research before making online payments and purchases. Make sure the business is legitimate. I will use my best judgment when sharing my personal information. I mean, that's probably the best way to put it, because there's no hard, fast rule as to yes, it's okay, or no, it's not okay. You do really have to use your best judgment. I will create strong, unique passwords for each account. Talked about that. I will enable two-factor authentication. I talked about that too. I will be social media smart. If we're talking, say, like Facebook, even quizzes, like, oh, you know, like these chain letters or whatever, like, oh, hey, you know, fill these out or whatever. Most of the time they're harmless, but if it's coming from an attacker, it's amazing how much information that people can achieve. I've got a really good friend of mine who, love him dearly, but he drives me crazy because he's one of these people that tells everybody on Facebook where he's going on vacation all the time. And he's like, oh, just arrived at this airport, just arrived, you know, and I'm like, stop it, don't do that. I don't know if it's still out there or not, I haven't looked in a while, but there was a website, which I've mentioned before, called pleaserobme.com. And it was pretty clever website, actually. What it would do is just collect information from Instagram, from TikTok, from Facebook, from all these social media sites, the common ones, and put it in a central source so people could look at it and see when somebody's not home. So in theory, this whole pleaserobme.com wasn't doing anything illegal. All it's doing is just repeating what's already out there. So don't help them out. You know, I love posting pictures of vacations just as much as the next person, but I'm one of those people that post pictures after I get home. So if I post at all, a lot of times I don't, because I just, you know, I'll share it with the immediate family and things like that. But I mean, how many friends do we really have, you know? Yes, question.
Okay. I haven't had time, but one of the things I would say is, having just gotten out of prison, I haven't been things, and I'll go on from there.
I'll make it go away.
Yeah,
oh, fun. This is another one. I didn't really spend much time on it, but online banking is still statistically way safer than not using it. Be aware as to, you don't have to obsess and go in there and check financial statements every day, but have at least kind of an understanding as to where your accounts should be. And banks are pretty good at contacting. If they see something weird, they might block a fraudulent credit card purchase. I've gotten called from BMO Harris before for weird things. But most of the time, I catch it before they do. And not to say that it happens a lot to me. I think it's probably happened 3 times in the last 15 years where something weird popped up on my credit card. But be your own cop when it comes to that. You know, just be aware as to what's on there. Jump online. Look at your credit card statement. And speaking of purchasing, credit card is still probably the safest way. You know, way safer than a debit card because it's insured. If something weird pops up on a credit card statement, all you have to do is call the bank and say, this wasn't me. And I've never heard of people running into a problem of them reversing that charge. If it's a debit card, that's a little different because the purchase immediately comes out of your actual account. You know, not just a statement saying you owe this, but it's actually subtracted from your checking or savings. So debit cards, it's not that I would say don't ever use one, but a credit card is considerably safer. So just be aware when it comes to financial statements. And then just stay up to date on the latest scams. You're here, so thank you for that. And hopefully I did a little bit of keeping you updated on what's going on, but it moves pretty quick. I am almost at time, so I think what I'm going to do here, we'll do a couple of these here. So you receive an unsolicited text from a website. You say, you're saying that your password has been compromised. They provide a link for you to change. What should you do? Anyone? Did somebody say follow the link? Delete it. I said, go back to the source. Always go back to the source. Let's see, that's too long. I don't want to read that. Let's see. When paying online, which payment method offers the best protection? You were listening. Good. If a website shows the padlock symbol, I am safe to shop. sort of a trick question. In fact, I had my wife proofread this, and she got that wrong, too. And she's like, this is really misleading. Well, yeah, it sort of is. The message for this is, if you see the padlock, don't assume that it's safe automatically. That's just one level. You are not guaranteed it's safe to shop. If I'm an attacker, I can spin up my own fake website. I can pay for a certificate, and my padlock looks just as good as anybody else's. So yes, there should be. If you go to some shopping site and it doesn't have it, that means it's running HTTP instead of HTTPS. I would question on whether you're in the right place. But if that lock is there, don't just automatically guarantee. You know, that's not an assurance that you're 100% safe. And we'll do one more here. Let's see. And that's pretty easy. We'll skip that. Like I said, you've got copies of this, so you can go back and look at it all. You receive an email from the government stating that you owe money and must pay immediately or you'll be fined. You should be an easy one. Yeah, never click on the link. Don't ever pay it immediately to avoid fines. I don't think the government ever says you have to pay this immediately. They usually, if you're in a situation like that, they would offer some sort of payment plan, and they would probably say, we need you to come into one of our offices so you can set up a payment plan. They wouldn't, and they wouldn't ask you to pay for it in gift cards. So. All right, let's jump to the summary here. So these were things that I covered. AI is by far the most frightening one that I'm seeing. Kind of looking forward to seeing where that goes. Don't be scared off by AI as far, you know, there's a lot of good that it can do, but the voice cloning has gotten just scary good. And just because I have like 3 minutes left, I'm going to replay this one because it's funny. This was done illegally because I didn't get permission.
This is Donald J. Trump. I just want to say how wonderful Bob Heck is. Very wonderful person. Very wonderful. And his family, very wonderful people. Lovely wife, Gloria, such a wonderful person. I've known Bob Heck for many years. Just ask anyone. And his youngest son, Bill. Very smart person, almost as smart as I am.
There we go. So with that, thank you very much. Like I said, that was a redo from last year, but I couldn't resist. It is. I changed the batteries.
Okay, any questions for Bill?
I'll hang around for...
He'll be around. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. Sam's coming in. Okay?
Okay. So we're ready to start with Sam. Sam's going to be talking about Windows 10. How many of you have gotten a message that says, we're ending all support for Windows 10? Yeah, just about everybody has. Okay, so let's turn it over to Sam and away we go.
Okay, now, show of hands, how many people are still using Windows 10? Well, Windows 10 is a great program, and what is happening is that Microsoft is not supporting Windows 10 anymore. It ended in October 15th of 2025. But what it means is that Microsoft is not supporting it. It doesn't mean that Windows 10 doesn't work. Windows 10 will still function, will still continue to work. If you're using it, you can continue using it. Your programs will still be there. Your data will still be there. What is happening is that if your Windows 10 computer breaks down for some reason, Microsoft will not come to your rescue. If you're having a technical issue with the program, Microsoft will not help you. Microsoft will not provide software updates or security updates. But you can still continue using it, but it's at your own risk. Computers continue to evolve. We've all seen this. Remember DOS? Anybody here remember DOS? Windows 3? Windows 7? Windows XP? Okay, all those were improvements. As Microsoft made improvements and as the hardware made improvements, the software had to keep up with it. Windows, or DOS, through Windows XP, were using what's called a 16-bit operating system. Windows 7 and above started using a 32-bit operating system, and now Windows 11 is using 64. So what does this mean? Well, your CPU, the central processing unit, is the brains of your computer. And think of it this way. The CPU is Los Angeles. And the freeway going into Los Angeles under the old systems was 16-bit. So it's 16 lanes of traffic going in and out of the city. By the time it got to Windows 7, Vista, Windows 10, that increased to 32-bit. So you can imagine there's a faster flow of cars going in and out of the city, So that's the data flowing in and out of your central processing unit. By the time we get to Windows 11, we're up to 64. So you've got 64 lanes of traffic. You can imagine that things are going to go faster. That's only natural. Well, that's what's happening. The other thing is that Windows 10 will no longer receive security updates. And this is the really important part. The security updates are like the doors to your house. If somebody tries to break into the front door, you can lock it. Somebody tries to break in through the back door, you can lock that too. If somebody tries to break in the basement window, you can put a board up. If you know that it's coming, you can protect against it. Well, No operating system is perfect. So they all have weaknesses. And the hackers try to exploit all those weaknesses. They try to take advantage. That's why all the security updates to keep blocking all those attempts. And this is a typical security update. You see here, it's automatically being downloaded. That's coming from Microsoft. They detect there's a problem, they'll send a patch to fix it. Well, that's no longer available with Windows 10. They're stopping. You can continue to use Windows 10, but it's on your own, you know, it's on your own volition. You're taking the risk. You're assuming the risk. So that means that you will have to get a good antivirus program, a good security program to make up for what Microsoft is no longer providing. So I can't stress it enough. Don't skimp on security. Some of the security programs are a bit pricey, but think of the alternative. If somebody breaks into your computer, steals all your personal information, steals your banking information, that's a lot more than the few dollars that you spend on a good security program. One program that I like and I use is called Malwarebytes. Well, that's in the $100 plus range, but it's worth the protection. Another flaw is called code injection. Now, this looks like a bunch of gibberish, but that is actual computer code. That's what the central processing unit sees. We see it as gibberish, but to a computer, it's a set of instructions. A hacker can break into any of these lines here and inject their own code. That will completely change the outcome. So that is one of the flaws that you have to be careful about, and that's why the security updates, whenever they find a flaw, they seal that door. Now here's some of the products that I recommend. I've used them all at one time or another, and I'm very happy with them. Right now, I am using Malwarebytes. But Malwarebytes comes in three versions. There's a free version, there's a standard version, and then there's the advanced version. The advanced is the one that I would recommend. It's a little pricey, but it's worth the protection. When you think of what could happen if you don't have the protection, you know, I wish I would have, could have, should have. Now, Windows 10 and 11 also have a built-in program. It's called Windows Defender. And Microsoft sends out security updates to this program. However, with Windows 10, no longer. Windows 11, they'll continue to support. So if you have, well, all of you are who are using Windows now will have Windows Defender in the computer. It's built in. Windows 10, what you have is what you have. That's it. Windows 11, going forward, you'll continue to get security updates. But Microsoft is making an option. They call it the Extended Security Update Program. And if you enroll in this program by paying a $30 fee, they'll continue to give you the updates until the year 2026. which we're in 2026 now, but it's good through the end of the year. Now, in Europe, this program is free because Europe has the Digital Protection Act, and they told Microsoft where to go and how to get there. So they're making it free in Europe, but in the U.S., you have to pay $30. But it's worth it. If you're planning on continuing to use 10, it's a good investment of $30. But it's only good through October of 2026. After that, no more. So you're given a one-year extension. If you have not decided whether you want to run Windows 11 or not, you'll have a year to decide. And you can also get this program free if you have a Microsoft account. They make it available to users who have a Microsoft account. They can redeem points for a free version of this program. So what are the options for Windows 11? If your computer is 5 years or younger, you can download Windows 11 from the Microsoft site and upgrade your computer. If your computer is 5 years but less than 10, you can still upgrade by using a program that will bypass all the checks that Microsoft puts. What Microsoft wants is they want to control everything, unfortunately. The truth is that older computers can still run Windows 11. What you have to do is use this program here to bypass all those checks that Microsoft puts in, because they just want to be in control. This bypasses that and returns control to you, the user. You should have control. The only problem is that it can be a little bit tricky, so if you have a friend or family member who understands computers, they can help guide you through all the steps that are necessary. In Europe, again, Microsoft, Europe told Microsoft where to go. They have this program that I was talking about on a website in Europe. You can download it for free and update to Windows 11, bypassing all of the Microsoft thou shalt nots. The only problem is that, again, you're at your own risk. And on the European version, they have a button that you click saying, I assume all responsibility. You click on that saying yes, and then the program will automatically load, and you're running Windows 11. And Microsoft is just trying to protect themselves. And also, Europe doesn't want to deal with a million computers in the landfill. Can you imagine if everybody junked their old computers? What a nightmare that would be. So Europe is one step ahead of us. So what can you do? If your hardware is older, if you're running a 32-bit processor or older. Now, the 32-bit processor was introduced in 2015. So if your computer is older than 2015, you're out of luck, because you need at least a 32-bit or a 64-bit processor. So, replacing the old machine, Well, you have a long support cycle. You have modern performance and security. And you don't have any compatibility problems. The con, it costs money. And data transfer from your old PC to the new one could be a little bit complicated. So again, you'll need help from somebody who understands the ins and outs of data transfer to get it. It's not impossible, but it's just a little bit, few extra steps you have to take. Bottom line, you can continue to use Windows 10, but be careful. Be careful about clicking on something you don't recognize. Clicking on, hey, click this as a free whatever. As Bill told us, be careful about somebody sends you something that's too good to be true. It is. So, use a good quality software, security software. Don't skimp on safety. Pay the price and make sure that you're constantly upgrading the system through whatever the manufacturer provides. All of the security manufacturers will provide you updates. So when you see those updates, make sure you download them and install them. And don't just load the program and forget about it. Make sure that you're set to make automatic scans on a regular basis. And it's not just once a month or once a year. A daily scan, or at the least a weekly scan. But that can run, you can set it, because all of the security software will have a way that you can set it for a certain time. So let's say you leave your computer on every Wednesday, and at 11 o'clock at night, it automatically makes a scan. Because that way, it's not bothering you while you're doing your genealogy research or whatever else. You do it on the off time, when you're normally going to be in bed or doing something else, and let the computer continue running, doing the automatic scan, doing its job to protect you. That is the key. Make sure that your software is doing the job. It's not enough just to buy an expensive program if you don't use it. Okay. And that is it in a nutshell. If you have any questions,
When it comes to Windows Defender, how does that rate with like some of the security software that you mentioned? Is Windows Defender good enough, or what does that do differently than the others?
Windows Defender is a good basic program. It'll do its job, but some of these other programs go above and beyond and provide extra protection. Like I saw that example about cold injection. That is a real problem because when your computer is booting up, when you first turn it on and it's going through its boot up cycle, you have no protection. So a hacker could inject code while it's in its boot up cycle and you'll never know it. So you need something that works in the background, even though it's not fully awake yet. You know, it hasn't gone through its complete cycle.
So will one interfere with the other?
Do you still keep the Windows Defender and get the other additionally? Yes, they'll work side by side. Windows Defender is made so it works side by side with any other program. Now, that's not true of all security software. Some of them will fight each other, but Defender doesn't have that problem. So you can run Defender and another program simultaneously. Excuse me. Yes, question?
Hey, are there any other options for operating systems beyond 11?
Well, there are other options as far as different operating systems. If you are not happy with Windows, there's always Apple, a Mac. There's also a program called the Chrome operating system. And you've probably seen these Chromebooks, which are very popular in schools because they are very inexpensive, and the program, the Chrome operating program, is free. However, it's not compatible with all of the software that's out there. For example, if you're using a favorite program for genealogy research, it may work well with Windows, it'll work well with Apple, but it may not work with Chrome. So there are some gives and takes. There's also another program called Unix, which is a Linux type. That is also available, but again, the software may not be compatible with some of the software you're using now. Particularly a lot of the genealogy programs that we all love and use, they may not be available.
What about Norton 360?
And what's your what?
Norton 360.
Norton 360 is a good security program. It is highly rated. It's a bit expensive. And they also offer extra protection in that they give you identity theft protection. Part of Norton 360 is identity theft protection. Well, they will look at your bank accounts and monitor that. So if they see something going wrong, some unusual withdrawals or something, they'll alert you. And Norton 360 also offers identity restoration. So if somebody does steal your identity, they will go to bat for you and help you to restore that. I'll give you an example of what happened to me. I had my credit card stolen. I used it at a kiosk to make a copy of a key. And you've probably seen these machines where you stick your key in. Well,
Menards has got them.
Yeah, Menards, they're all over. Mm-hmm. Well, when you put your credit card in, that information goes to a company in New Jersey. That's who puts all that information out, or puts those machines out.
That same thing's happening with banks.
Yep.
Their marketing companies is sending out information, and one of the big banks in the area has been hacked.
Yep.
Because of the marketing company, not because of the bank.
Exactly. So what happened to me is that somehow my credit card information was intercepted while being transferred to New Jersey, and somebody made a duplicate of my credit card in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And they went to a fancy restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
$800 dinner bill.
They probably bought everybody.
Oh, they must have had a heck of a good time. Now, when I saw that, I disputed it right away. My bank reversed the charges, and I got a new credit card. But whoever that was, when the restaurant came back saying, hey, wait a minute. But it could happen. It could happen to anyone.
They used to start small and then go big.
Yep.
Now they just go big.
They go for the apple pie right away.
Right.
Yeah. I've heard that using a Mac, you don't have to use a security system. Do you think that's true?
No, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several security programs available for Mac. The reason that came out was because Mac was not as popular as IBM. And being that they were a small player, not many people were bothering. But now that Mac has become an equal player with IBM, they're just as subject to hacks, they're just as subject to security flaws. So there are several good security programs designed for Mac, and by all means, use them.
Anyone else? Okay, we want to thank you very much for showing up tonight. What was our count? 42? 42 of you here. That's excellent. Bill made a prediction, as a matter of fact. He said, what did you say, 15 maybe? Well, my wife insisted that the weather is so bad no one's going to show up. So she'll be surprised. 42. Congratulations. So, you did a really good job. Thank you very much, Sam. Thank you, Bill. We do this security update every year, and the Bill and Sam show has been going on for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
And so we think it's well worthwhile. You know, it lets you know what's new, what's happening. And for those of you who did not get that $10,000 check from me, please send me an email. Send me an email with your social security number, with your bank account number, okay? With your passwords, all the passwords you own, and send it to me, and I'll think about it, okay? So in the meantime, we're ready to take off because we have to put all the tables back the way they were. So the steering committee is going to be busy working, doing that. Make sure you pick up anything that you brought in. If you have garbage, I don't know, does anyone have garbage? No? Good. So we don't have to worry about garbage, but they really frown on our leaving garbage here because it doesn't